Hello and welcome to Dialogue with Visionaries. My name is Anne Wagner, and today we have Rama Vernon and Elizabeth Sartoris with our Dialogue with Visionaries. Today's topic is From Hostilities to Harmonies. And Elizabeth is a PhD, an internationally known evolution biologist and futurist, and we'll go ahead and begin.
Oh, well, I met Elizabeth, I think in 1989, at a conference in Costa Rica called, the theme of which was Seeking the True Meaning of Peace. She was living in Greece at that time, and when she spoke, we were both keynote speakers, and I had finished my talk, and then shortly after, Elizabeth got up to speak, and I thought she talked about the environmental issues in such a clear, profound way that when I came back to the United States, I kept in touch with her in Greece. And when she moved back to this country, we were always interacting. Wherever she was or we were, somehow we always found a way to come together. Her work is very impressive, and she has a very deeply devout spiritual bent in the way she brings it forth into the world. And this is why we invited her to be on this program to share her vast wisdom. We'll have to have her back to share more. And to enlighten us about what is happening in the world. And the theme of today's discussion is From Hostilities to Harmony. And I think we could all use that in our life today, where there's more division in our world than ever before. So Elizabeth, I'd like to ask you how you got the title of evolution biologist. This is such a rare title.
Oh, it's not so rare in science, but Rama, I just want to thank you for your introduction. It's been such a blessing in my life to know an actual bodhisattva as a girlfriend.
Oh.
And we're both strong political animals as well as spiritual beings. After all, we're having this human experience, right?
Right.
So from the time I was a kid, I was asking questions I didn't know were the great philosophical questions of the ages. I just wanted to know, who are we people? Where do we come from and where are we headed? And I loved nature. As a child, I was allowed to roam freely in it. And so I decided I wanted to study biology and evolution. And then I was told that was a boy's subject, a science, and sent off to art school for my first degree. But once I was free of parental authority and had graduated as an artist, I could go back and become a scientist, which I did. And I call being an evolution biologist being a deep pastist in order to be a good futurist. Because if you know the trajectory which we humans in our physical material earth world are, then we should be able to have a better idea of where we can head in the future. And indeed, what I found was that there's a cycle going on. It's actually a spiral that keeps building bigger and larger entities from the original microbes that were the only creatures on Earth for half of all evolution. For 2 billion years, there were nothing but ancient bacteria around, but they changed the climate, they caused global hunger, they caused global pollution, and they solved both of those in turn. And I was fascinated by how could these ancient little tiny microbes that we wouldn't even be able to see, and of course the microbes are still around with us, unable to see them except through microscopes, how could they solve such big problems? And I discovered they had been duking it out, and then they built these cooperatives, which became the kind of cells we're made of. And then those cells went back to starting out, duking things out, and then they eventually, after another 1 billion years, formed multicelled creatures. And the rest of it you all learned in biology class from multicelled creatures, you know, how they start in the sea or around hot springs on land, and then they come up and there are plants and flowers and dinosaurs and all those things you know about. So I realized after I had done my postdoc at the Museum of Natural History, I went off to Greece and decided to write novels. But it kept nagging at me that I really wanted to be a scientist who understood where we came from and where we can be headed. So I started working on evolution biology my way, on my own, doing my own research, and came to this maturation cycle where the youthful phase is the Darwinian phase where everybody's duking things out. And then there's a mature phase where they come together forming cooperative wholes. And the beauty is now evolution biology is finally catching up, recognizing that we've always had cooperation taught as the main evolutionary principle by Kropotkin in the Soviet Union. But in the West, we couldn't do that because that was communist and we were being capitalist, and capitalists like Darwin because it's about the duking it out phase.
So could the other day or yesterday, we talked a little bit about how this could relate to the situation today in our American governance. And could you explain that? Because you said something very interesting that might help people move through this, what they might see as a difficult time in our history.
Yes, exactly. Well, once you get this maturation cycle that keeps repeating, so that every species goes through a youthful phase and a mature phase, and you look at humanity and you see that some human cultures actually went through into that cooperative maturity. And there are still some of them left in the indigenous people's worlds. In fact, our U.S. Constitution is based on the Haudenosaunee Great Law of Peace, because our founding fathers, like Ben Franklin, went off to live with the Indians to see how did they make peace, and the founding fathers were going to start this new kind of republic that was going to be democratic, and there was no model for democracy except with the Indians, and in fact, the word got all the way to Europe because Ben Franklin was always traveling back and forth, and the Europeans learned about democracy, not so much from the Greeks as from the Indians in the New World. So here we are now with our whole species of humanity having globalized, and it's the first time that we've had to face how to build cooperation at that scale. And what I see is that we are right in that crisis point between the immature hostilities and the mature harmonies. As individuals, we're all expected to be feisty in adolescence and then settle down and be cooperative adults, right? But when we teach our children, don't hit each other, don't take things away from each other, don't call each other names, and then they turn on the TV, and what are the grown-ups doing? Hitting each other, calling each other names. And now we're seeing the most extreme version of that, where every day we get tweets in which our very president is name calling and hitting at people and stuff. So I see this as good evidence that we really are in this crisis point where things have to come undone, have to come unglued in order to keep building. You know, the butterfly version of things.
So do you see this as a form of the Shiva energy, which was one of, they say destruction, but dissolution of where the old systems have to fall apart before the new can come forth?
Yeah, because you can't change rigid systems. You know, trees are very flexible in their roots and in their branches and stuff. Even though they stay in place, they have this incredible flexibility. But we humans, we traded in knowing what to do for big brains that had the freedom to choose. Animals know how to govern themselves, how to find mates, how to divide territory amicably, all those things that our trade-off in physical bodies was to have the freedom of choice, but we don't take on the responsibility for that freedom so well, mm-hmm. because we must choose how to govern ourselves. And the rigid structures tend to fail. The whole civilization fails. If we work like a caterpillar acts like our culture, our economy, it chews its way through the leaves and eats hundreds of times its weight every day, and then it gets so bloated it hangs itself up and goes to sleep, and its skin hardens and forms this chrysalis. And the little imaginal cells that have been like stem cells tucked away there all along now come out and see the caterpillar is going into meltdown and disintegrating, so that they can now feed off that rich soup of experience, right? And build a butterfly that lives lightly on the world instead of the caterpillar. So Barbara Marx Hubbard and I both got this from Nori Huddle, and we think that's a good apt metaphor to show you that the very disintegration provides the fodder. It's not everything goes to pot and then suddenly the new springs out. It's not that kind of phoenix reborn from the ashes.
So you're saying it's more like an evolutionary transformation.
Exactly. Ongoing, a step at a time. Things are melting down at the same time that we're building the harmonious world. The world of hostility is still clinging to its life.
Yeah. Are there any questions, Anne, Jenny, or any of our viewers?
We don't have any questions right now, and participants, attendees can put a note in the chat box or in the Q&A. One of the things that might be good to know is how governance works in nature.
Yeah. That's a very good question, because nature doesn't do the either ors that humans do. It's more about both ands. So for example, in nature, nature is very profoundly conservative with things that work well and very radically changes the things that don't work. And if we could see that democracy should be exactly that kind of a cooperative arrangement, where those who are inclined to want to protect what works play the conservative role, and the change agents play the other side, which we call the left versus the right, and stop letting ourselves be divided so that the behind the scenes caterpillar can go on chomping its way through the ecosystem while we're fighting with each other over abortion rights or something. So that democracy will work and will bring us to a harmonious future when we get it as cooperation, not as hostilities with each other. Mm. And every 4 years we decide to do one or the other. That makes no sense at all. So my view of how nature does harmonies.
Elizabeth, have you ever seen in your lifetime as many divides as you do now within our country, with the people, the government,
never.
Every institution.
No, we're tearing down even the divisions between fact and fiction. We're, we don't know what's fake.
Oh, say something about that. That's very important.
Yeah, it's very important because, you mentioned I have a spiritual bent. Well, I see the universe, all our scientists, whether they're quantum scientists or Newtonian, Einsteinian scientists, agree that the universe is made of vibrations. And the energies of vibration go all the way from the density of matter to the rarity of spirit. And so we're not bodies with souls or spirits. We're mind, body, spirit keyboards of vibrations, the whole keyboard that we play. So we can look at the universe from the consciousness high keys and see that matter just comes when you slow down some vibrations, or we can start at the low end through matter like Western science and go up the keyboard and see that from either end you can see that it's a whole, that it's a whole matter, energy, spirit universe. And that we are matter, energy, spirit beings. and that we are little minds within a big mind. When we go into meditation, into yoga, mm-hmm. we go inward for our knowledge, as the Eastern sciences do. When we go to the low end of the keyboard and look at the world of matter, we do outward research science like the West has done in Western science. All of those are sciences. All of those are important, and all of those really teach unity. And instead, as I said, caterpillars trying to hang on. So the more you can divide and conquer, the more you can keep people apart, the more you can say, you don't even know what's real. So you should listen to us because yeah. everything is fake. So it opens your mind.
It sounds like we need discrimination now as to what's, this is avidya. Can we look at it like what's real and what's non-real? This could also be asmita, the eye consciousness in the sutras, yoga sutras. So basically, you're saying that we need, I get this from what you're saying, that we have to be more discriminating than ever to discern the real from the unreal.
Discernment is the key. Yes. Yes. That you want to discern with your gut instinct. Your gut is your truth teller. You know, if you, when you're off your path, you know it in the gut, you know it in the heart. Right? The mind is not very helpful when you're trying to discern.
Yes.
I think you'd agree that, and you're the expert on how the mind, the heart mind and the gut mind are all part of the picture.
It's well, like, I wish.
Well, that's the keyboard. The gut is in the low keys and the heart is at the center and the mind is up above there somewhere, but it can go astray. Because it's new in evolution, our human mind. And so we have to go in to tap into our full mind, our full being, and our full guidance.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's only available from the inside.
Yes. And there are so many people on in the spiritual life, let's call it, who right now are very, they have never been upset in this degree before, and some of trying to lift above this to the Vedantic unification of consciousness and hold the world from that perspective rather than the duality. Can you talk about this a little bit?
Well, I think, you know, that we're here to ground cosmic love all the way down to our toes. Mm-hmm. So when things get scary, and if you're not really scared now, you're not paying attention to what's going on in the world because it is the scariest it's ever been.
That's scary, what you just said, but it's good. We have to face it.
We're facing unprecedented heat, as you know. What's your temperature today, Rama?
What?
What's the temperature outside where you are today?
Oh, I don't even know. All I can tell you is it feels hot to me.
Very. You're hiding inside. It's probably 100 degrees, and it's been more in many places. And the sea level is going to rise, and we can't tell you when, but we can tell you that it will. And
Elizabeth, you told me that when I was living in Gig Harbor, one house back from the water.
Really?
Did sound. And you said the sea level's going to rise. And I believe that was 20 years ago. That was a long time ago. And
that
you said something about, 200 feet? Which is all.
If the poles totally melt and the heat expands the ocean water sufficiently, it'll be about 15 stories up on a building. On a high rise, and that's about 60 meters, which is, it's about 200 feet.
This will require migration of the people living near the sea.
Yeah, if the poles melt completely.
And will they? Do you know if they will?
We can't be sure, but we were due for an ice age now. And as Jim Lovelock used to warn me in the 80s when we talked, we seem to be tipping it into a hot age instead. by overloading the atmosphere with all that fossil fuels and stuff. Yeah. So nature is just trying to keep its balance, its harmonious balance. And going in and out of ice ages has been sort of like a planetary breathing cycle. It has also melted poles in the past. It wouldn't be the first time that Earth melted its poles. What we need to do now is figure out how many humans can we get through this incredible storm of crises? What do each of us need to do to go inward, become strong, know our unity with all life, stop having any kind of enemies, don't even waste your energy on the negative side, and keep building the positive, building it by becoming positive and hopeful yourself, then you will become an attractor for others. And we know what to do. We know that we need to eat organic, clean food and stop using fossil fuels in our agriculture. And we know that gratitude and love, when we as we grow our food, makes that food make us healthy, so we need less health care. We know that we need to build strong communities where people practice taking care of each other and building farmers markets and building the local energy devices that are clean and green. And we have to spread that to making friends with everyone across the planet.
Well, it sounds like this is a good time for yoga.
Yes. Yeah. We have a few questions.
Connection, right?
Yes, yes. Are there any questions, Anne?
Yes. Well, there's some comments and some questions. So Larissa says, I love this discussion. I wish my mother was present with us to be a part of it. And then, let's see. And there's some agreement. Yes, it's with the eyes that one sees, it is with the heart that one sees clearly. It is with our gut and intuition that we fully see. And then Cynthia says, why are so many people unable to discern?
Oh, is that a good question? Since the election, friendships have been separated. We don't know if it's forever or just temporarily. Because people felt, and again, you can have two sides of this, but people felt because of the lack of discrimination in their friends who voted for the candidate we have now as our president, that they felt, who is this person? I don't know this person. They don't have discrimination. And of course, it can be felt on the other side, looking at, well, why wouldn't you vote for this person? Where's your discrimination? I've never seen it to this degree before, where it's interrupted friendships, and even members of the family have been disassociating because of their different political views. Elizabeth, can you speak to that?
I'd love to. For one thing, I'd like to encourage everyone in the audience to use the word discussion only when you mean serious analytic taking things apart to understand, and use dialogue, a beautiful Greek word, dia logos. Through the word, you reach harmony, not necessarily agreement, but harmony, like the different notes of a chord. And so the reason that I think we're so split up in so many ways that we can no longer discern because we don't even know what's what anymore is because of the stories that guide our lives. Mm-hmm. Humans are storytellers from the get-go. We cannot live without our stories. Last night I had my MBA students go into what kind of a universe do you live in? What's the origin of humanity? Is there life after death? All of these questions to get them to recognize that they each have a story and that they each have a different story that they live by. Well, our culture has taught us Darwinian hostilities, and now it's coming into Kropotkinian harmonies, but that hasn't reached the wider public yet. We're told that we live in a dog-eat-dog universe where everybody's on their own, They're duking it out. Some rise to the top through their special merit, and the rest of them are losers, right? We hear every day, these are the winners, these are the losers. And that's coming from our guidance, from our top political authority to talk that way and to diss people and to do, I mean, I love the Trump balloon in that started in England where he's indicted. Because he's the eternal child, being a bratty, bratty child, right? And yet, what do you do when you're scared to death and you cling to something like white supremacy or whatever it is? And your gut is only going with, I'm scared. I'm scared. And this person is going to somehow take care of me if I go along with what he says.
And if he says only I alone can fix it, people might believe that, you see.
That's how dictatorships work. And so we have to change our story. We have to get that evolution, that all of our planet and its beautiful creatures are on our side. They've worked out these harmonies. And many humans in the past have worked out these harmonies. We've just never had to do this at a global scale before. So do it locally and then realize that the same principles you're operating on locally of everyone has to be healthy for a family to be healthy, everyone needs to be cared for a community to be healthy, to recognize that the same principles will apply at the global level, that there can be no enemies. And we have the resources to lift everybody up and to do the clean, green energy and all the cooperation is possible. I say to young people, look at the things you disapprove of that your elders are doing and just don't do them yourselves.
What a concept.
If you disapprove of war and dictatorships and fossil fuels and stuff, don't do them anymore and it'll be a new world. You'll have a new story to live by.
And Elizabeth, I think right now there's so many people and our young people who feel frustrated that no matter, first they don't know what they can do. The next is those that do take action, they feel helpless and they feel it's not going anywhere, such as the gun laws. And I just wonder what you think of that in a broader biological perspective. Why are we so blocked right now?
Yeah, we're so blocked right now because we don't have a new story to replace the old one yet.
Okay.
There's a very good TED Talk by George Monbiot, M-O-N-B-I-O-T. It's a TED Talk, and it's about story, and it's about how the Keynesians saved us from the elite robber bankers in the United States and brought in Keynesian economics where the government was going to even out all these boom and bust cycles and stuff. And then that fails. And so you get the news story, the hero comes in again and says, I can fix it. And you get neoliberalism and you say, no more government restraints on business. Business will take care of everything and the wealth will trickle down to you. And then that turns out to fail. And what's the hero's journey story now? We don't have the one that says, hey, it is really cool to cooperate. When we do, we're so creative and we can get so many things done that we must not let ourselves be divided. And I think the first place to pitch that, and I wish I could pitch that idea that nature never, never divides the radicals from the conservatives. That it has them talk to each other in a division of labor. If they could get that we cannot be separated, every administration, if the president is a Democrat, then the vice president should be a Republican or something, you know. The Brits actually tried this, but there was no education for it, so it failed. They actually tried that in England.
Oh, they did?
Yes, it was a huge step.
When did they try it?
When a couple of prime ministers ago, there was a short-lived administration that tried to do it. So we have to keep trying. You have to keep doing this in waves. And if the Democratic candidates would stop getting into the hostilities, which yes. they are, they're picking on each other and they're picking on Trump. And instead of saying, we know how to do this differently, and so, and we, in our game, everybody gets to play, and yes. we don't keep deciding to do either this or that.
Whoa.
We build a clean, green economy while we're taking care of preserving nature and our parks and things like that. You know, there's lots for both conservatives and radicals to do here.
Yes.
Beautiful. Do it in harmony. Do it as harmoniously as you can. And dialogue with each other through the word we reach harmony rather than discussing, which is, am I right or are you right? Your way or my way. My way or the highway.
You know? That's really what some people are saying right now.
Yeah, I have to get over that.
So I wonder if it's time, Anne, if we should open this up for questions or discussion or comments.
Dialogue.
So there's a couple other comments that have come in terms of the environment. Someone who's in Sedona says it feels like Southwest Florida. It's just as humid in Sedona as it is somewhere else. And then there's a comment about how does one person make a difference and serve the expanded vision of the future in this environment. And I think your discussion about story as being creating a new story is good, but I don't know if you have any other comments on how
story circles with each other. Recognize that the hero savior story doesn't give you the new what's the joy of community about. And mm-hmm. if you look at the Monbiot TED Talk, that could be a good introduction. To understanding the power of story and why we need a story now that's not about the dog-eat-dog Darwinian world, but the new cooperative world that E.O. Wilson and his followers have been bringing in, that humans are a relatively rare social species. We are meant to live together in harmony in huge numbers.
Yeah.
In huge yeah. numbers. And our cities are getting together across the world, and every individual can think about what is the world we want to have and imagine it to be real in your story circles. Imagine that future to be real. To play it out as though you're living in that future and talking to each other about what's going on, and then backcast and saying, how did we build it? How did we get here? Rather than making a plan now for this is what we should have and this is what we should have, feel your way into it in meditation with each other in a story circle, and then see if you can figure out ways to, we have affordable housing for everybody. What did we have to do to get there? You know, we don't have, we're all eating organic food. How did that transition happen? Ooh, yeah, the fossil fuel companies went into moving water around the planet in their pipes. That's good, right?
And our vehicles don't have to use gasoline as they once did in the ancient past.
So become an attractor by changing your own story and go out and preach a new story that's very open to everyone else contributing to it.
Oh, beautiful.
Very open. It has to be open. Harmonies, you know, expand and move into new music all the time.
Yes. We have 12 more minutes. Are there any other comments or questions, Anne?
Yeah. Well, there's a question from Cheryl about when I listen to dialogues of either faction, shall we call it, it seems that there are those with short-term fear-based reaction, those who are hope and have more vision of the future. And I think the question about how to respond to the fear is good. How do we respond when we're in dialogue and we notice fear? How do we respond?
I think we should recognize it as an appropriate response to start with. your fear is coming from what you're seeing is happening, which is scary. You ought to be afraid. Then you have to figure out, how do I transmute my personal gut fear into something positive?
Like and into action, you're saying.
Well, that's one thing. Yeah, a poet once wrote me a poem with the line, he was a Bengali, and the line in English was, somewhere the tears and the agony are stored into the chest of thunder.
Oh,
somewhere the tears and the agony are stored into the chest of thunder. It was during the Vietnam War, I was beating my head against the wall about napalm children and stuff. He said, energy is energy. Take that energy and transmute it. But to make yourself strong enough to transmute it, it's very helpful to do yoga and inner connection with the guidance that shows you that you are loved in the universe and that you're immortal as a soul. So what's the worst thing that can happen to you? That you lose your body? You know, if your story includes that not being the end, maybe even being graduation when you've learned to get things right, then people will say, why are you smiling in the middle of this disaster?
Yeah.
Because I know that I'm loved and that I'm here at this time in this place to make this world a better place.
And, you know, our practices of yoga are meant to give us more equanimity. But after the last election, I was traveling and teaching, working with yoga teachers. And so many of all of us lost our equanimity. For some, it may be temporary. For others, a little long term. But it Even then, with all these practices, it was a very difficult balance to maintain.
Yeah. I think we have to accept that I don't think humanity is going to get through these crises in anything like our current numbers on the planet. Mm. If you look at Earth from space as a living biological entity, and then here, that 96% of the mammals on this planet are humans, their livestock, and their pets. 96%. You say, whoa, something is way out of balance here.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not the worst thing in the world if our numbers get reduced to where we can be an ecosophy, which is my way of saying, you know, we've done economy and ecology. Ecology is the biology, the living planet, and economy is the rules by which you run things, how you know, what your guidelines are. And we have made that whole ecology subservient to our economy. And our rules say you can exploit everything you want, all you want, and you end up with 96% of the mammals are humans and related. Right. And that's not the way to grow food. And I am not opposed to livestock if it's free on big ranges in places that need to be regreened because they've been desertified. That's appropriate. But not in feedlots. Not your carrots in a carrot feedlot. Either.
Yes.
They are as sentient as the cow is. They just don't have faces to demonstrate that to you.
That's a huge topic, isn't it? And is there anything else, Anne, that
there's another question from Cheryl. Perhaps this is an era of turmoil we live in that is now bringing to light the underbelly of society so that we can begin to really heal the spiritual core of humanity. If that desire to protect at the center of a fear-based approach could be expanded beyond the individual to protect next their families and communities and finally the whole earth, how can we do that? That's how I'd like to approach discussions and dialogues with those across the table.
What say you, Elizabeth?
The basic question was my reaction was, yes, the shadow side needs to come up. Yes, transparency. recognizing the shadow in each of us, and that's a normal thing. You have to have darkness in order to even understand light, in a way, you know?
Yeah.
The yin-yang symbol is my favorite symbol of all time. It shows the white radiation spiraling outward and the dark gravity spiraling inward on the other side, right, of the, like, donut universe. It's a constantly transforming itself, and you have to take it into account and not deny it, because the denial holds you up from working. You have to discern the positive and the negative in order to see your path on the positive side.
Oh, beautiful.
You don't waste your time hating the negative.
Yes. Well, in yoga, of course, it's always a balance of both.
Yes.
You know, the darkness and the light. And without the background of darkness, we would never have light. So it honors both of these aspects.
I think that's why they say angels are lined up for human bodies. They only get to play in the high keys.
And
they have a body to vibrate those passions. There's a lovely book called Meetings with the Archangel by, Mitchell. He's Byron Katie's husband.
Oh, yes.
Stephen Mitchell. And he's just finished writing a book against angels, and then an angel shows up in his yard. And toward the end, the angel says something like, "Don't look to us angels for compassion, because we can't even feel passion. So how can we understand compassion?
Whoa.
Your bodies vibrate the kind of passion that can be directed into the negative or the positive.
Yeah.
And you have the capacity to discern that, to make the choices."
Beautiful. So, oh my gosh.
Do what makes your own heart sing to change the world, whether you're a poet, a gardener, a politician, or a scientist, or whatever your inclination is, follow your heart and use that talent toward a better world. All of these things will play a role. And if you're following your own heart and passion, you will become the attractor to others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Elizabeth, this is so wonderful. Anybody else have anything to ask or say?
Last question.
There was another question about if anyone senses a shift in the masses after the mass shootings that happened, and then also a request to repeat the quote about thunder.
About what?
Thunder and tears.
Oh. Somewhere the tears and the agony are stored into the chest of thunder. The energy is energy. Somewhere the tears and the agony are stored into the chest of thunder. Thunder is big. Thunder makes a difference. It wakes people up.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So whatever you can do to transform the energies of fear by acknowledging the fear, go so deep into it that you come out the other side.
Yeah.
You know, it's like pain. Sometimes you can reduce pain by going so deep into it that you come through it.
Anything else?
And it's appropriate to be afraid and to feel the pain of what's happening. And if we can't save all of humanity, the ones that will get through are the ones who are building the butterfly world.
Oh, beautiful.
And who do it sensibly. It may mean moving uphill, you know.
Oh, Elizabeth, I wish we had hours just to hear. Sometimes in our conversations in the past, I wish that so many people were able to hear them, because your wisdom, your profundity is so vast. And I always relish those times we had together. Is there anything else, Anne? We've only got a couple minutes.
I want to encourage Rama to get your biography out.
Starting next year.
Because you've been through the dark side. You've been there. You know the seamy side of human life and the things that need changing. Yes.
And thank God for yoga.
And there's There's definitely agreement. So one of the attendees says we either contribute to the energy of the problem or to the solution. And then another attendee says, I do think there is an energetic shift now following the last two mass shootings. The mass of society is finally aware of self-centered approach as a path toward destructive behaviors. And maybe in Hong Kong, we've seen, masses coming up and arising. And then what do you have to say about Marianne Williamson's courage to bring forth the conversation she is bringing to our nation? And then also those ready for the magic bus are lining up at the bus stops so that we are, that we're positioned at, so.
Well, go
ahead, Elizabeth. What do you think of what Marianne Williamson's bringing forth?
I think it's very important for her to be bringing that voice into the dialogue, and I hope that she gets to keep it in that dialogue as long as she lives.
Oh, beautiful. Well, I think it's our time, isn't it, Anne?
Thank you very much, Rama, and thank you, Elizabeth. It's 3:45, and so our webinar and our dialogue is now coming to an end. So thank you so much for your time. It's been a real honor and a pleasure to be able to talk with you.
It has been an honor, Elizabeth, that you've joined us, and I thank Jenny and Anne for helping to make this all possible. And we just wish you the very best in the continuance of your magnificent work.
Same to you, my dear Rama.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you both. I'm now ending the recording.
Okay.
Thanks, Jenny and Anne. Bye.
Bye.